Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
You made a very important announcement on LinkedIn this week, and I would like to spend time on that. Either in the next show or two shows from now when we discuss the role of lawyers who make a decision to not take their clients' problems to court and to solve their problems out of court. It's a real ethical and public-centric issue, which I want to expand on in much greater detail in the future. So congratulations to you, Leanne. It takes courage to do what you did, and I really applaud you and support you in that regard.
Well, thank you. That means a lot.
Okay. Court costs in divorce. First of all, what does that even mean? Well, let's start with the proposition that to go to court, you have to pay a lawyer to help you prepare a whole bunch of documents, then to sift through your spouse's documents, then to read it all, then to organize oral arguments, sometimes for hours and hours and hours of preparation. And then you go to court, whether you're going to court for a case conference or a settlement conference or a motion or a trial, and then you get a result. And then the client has to pay the lawyer. Well, in some cases, a judge has the power to grant the client partial or full reimbursement of their costs, which usually consists of lawyer fees, disbursements, things that you have to pay out of pocket, and sometimes even expert fees that the client incurred to be able to make the case in front of a judge. And that is what we are talking about today. Court costs payable by one spouse to another stemming from a divorce in court.
Yes, and it's a topic that can have a significant, or it's an issue that can have a significant impact on a case. And I think the purpose behind it, why a court might order another party to pay, a portion or almost all of the other party's costs. The idea behind it is to discourage, frivolous or vexatious litigation where, one party is maybe trying to, use the litigation system or the legal system to kind of abuse the other party and out-lawyer them because they have more money so they can, wear down the other party through constant litigation and constant motions for different things. And so the idea is that if you bring a motion, for example, although it could be for other things too, and you're not successful, then maybe there should be a consequence to that. And that's where the issue of costs comes into play. So it's to encourage parties to settle and to discourage them from bringing, motions or trials or other things that have no merit to them.
In fact, I'm glad you brought up the underlying policy behind court costs and the granting of costs. Because what judges now do, which they didn't do before, but now oftentimes most decisions granted by courts are based on a written endorsement. In the earlier years of my practice, I would go to court, I would argue a motion, and in some cases, even a trial, judges would give an oral decision. And then they would just write into the court record what the actual affirmative order was, but their reasoning and their thought process was provided orally. Well, now, whether it's for the underlying court decision or for court costs, judges actually write out their analysis, which is really helpful. And on the subject of court costs, oftentimes the judges will refer to a court of appeal decision or a series of court of appeal decisions, and they will actually refer to the purpose underlying court costs. And I'll share that with our viewers. Purpose number one is to indemnify or to reimburse the person who incurred the cost to get to where they got. So if somebody went to court and asked for a particular order and got that order, reason number one is indemnification or refunding them. Reason number two is to deter or discourage the other person from denying relief or denying an order or opposing an order that they ought not to. Third reason is to encourage reasonable settlements of cases, which takes us to the use of an offer to settle, where people bring a motion or go to trial. Oftentimes, we lawyers serve, in accordance with the rules, an offer to settle in written form that says, even though I'm asking for this, I'll settle for that. And then at the end of the hearing, when the judge releases the decision, the judge says, I'll hear submissions on costs. And if, for example, there was an offer, we would provide a copy of the offer to the judge with our bill of costs, which is a summary of what the costs were to get this far. And the judge will look at the offer, compare it to what the judge actually ordered. And if the offer either matched what was ordered or was actually even more generous to the losing party than what was ultimately ordered, more generous to the winning party. I may have said that wrong. But bottom line is, if you beat your offer, then you will likely get a higher amount in costs. Now, the higher may not be full indemnity, but the higher will likely be somewhere between 50 to 75% of your actual bill, if the actual bill is reasonable. And then, of course, we've had some recent case law in the last few years that has now started talking about the quantification of costs. And the quantification of cost, they have invoked two words, reasonableness and proportionate. And those words mean, was it reasonable to have four lawyers working on this file, or should it have only been one lawyer? Was it reasonable for that one lawyer to have spent 80 hours prepping when they could have prepped in 10 hours? So that's the reasonableness part. The proportionality piece is, was the issue that they fought over, was it of that level of importance that they spent this kind of money fighting over that kind of issue? And that's the proportionality analysis. And so when you see court costs and you get court costs or you're denied court costs, judges are constantly using those parameters to ascertain whether they're going to do it or not. And so that's where it's so important. And I tell this to my clients all the time. We have to appear and be reasonable throughout. Because if you take unreasonable positions, you might win the odd time on the unreasonable case, but you will almost always lose on costs. And indeed, the family law rules even say, if you were successful, you will be denied, or you might be denied costs if you are found to have been unreasonable. And so I remember I had a case like that about 10 years ago where I represented a woman, and she wanted sole custody of a child, and she wanted very limited time for the father to have the child. We lost. Judge ordered shared parenting and joint custody, and he actually made that offer, and he won. And the judge denied him court costs after a two-week trial whereby he was looking for $80,000 in costs. But he was found to be unreasonable, and he was denied costs. So we always have to remember, what is the law? But more importantly, what's the underlying purpose of the law? What's the philosophy of the law? And on the subject of court costs, there's Leanne, you said it bang on. There's a really good underlying philosophy to court costs. And we have to always think about that, not only with respect to the subject of costs, but how we plead a case in court as well.
Yeah, and I think one thing I'm always reminding clients is that there is very much a discretionary element to costs, to judges awarding costs. They have the guidelines that you've touched upon, Steve, that they have to follow in making a decision about whether or not to award costs. But costs are never not a guarantee. And I find sometimes I'll get a client and, you know, they think they've got a really strong position, and maybe they do have a strong position, and they're going in and they don't want to make an offer to settle, or they think that the other side is going to lose and is going to have to pay their costs. So they're not concerned about what my costs might be because they think the other side's going to lose and have to pay my costs anyway. And I always say like that there's no guarantee of that. It's never a guarantee that you'll get your costs covered or you'll get an order for costs. So you need to operate on the assumption and be making your decisions that that's not necessarily going to happen. And, you know, but setting yourself up strategically so that, it will possibly happen if you're successful. And I know, Steve, I've wanted to talk to you about this, on a personal basis, let alone with our listeners. But you had a case very recently, and I believe it went to the Court of Appeal even, on the issue of costs, and you got a very good judgment for your client. So why don't you tell listeners a little bit about that case?
Sure. So the name of the case is Lakatia and Mera, LakHtakia versus Mera, MeHra. And like all of our cases, they're public record. You can go onto canlii.org, canlii.org, click Ontario, and you either click my name or you click the client's name, and you can read the case. And that was a case where I was actually lawyer number 3 or 4. And I was the last lawyer in a series of lawyers that our client had. And we ended up trying to settle the case, couldn't settle the case, ended up going to trial. The case involved a whole bunch of witnesses, some of whom were expert witnesses. The expert witnesses, at least the ones for us, charged our clients quite a hefty amount of money because it involved two very important issues. One was international child abduction, and so we had an expert for that. And secondly, we also had an expert on the financial issues because this was a case involving support and we needed to lead evidence with respect to the husband's actual income as opposed to what he declared his income to be. And there was quite a sea of difference between what he declared his income to be and what his actual income was as found by the court. And so that case resulted in about a 2-week trial. And at the end of the trial, the judge released the decision about 7 or 8 months later. It was a lengthy decision. And in that case, going back to my earlier comments about reasonableness and proportionality, the judge found that the husband in that case was not acting reasonably as it related to a variety of issues, but principally the subject of income. The judge found that he deliberately misled the court and his experts with respect to what his income was, and that it was indeed necessary for this woman to proceed through the many, many levels of the process in order to ultimately end up at a trial where a judge ultimately agreed with her and her experts with respect to what the income was. And then it took another couple of months for the case, for the judge to release the decision regarding costs. But in the interim period, the husband appealed the trial decision and we did all the work necessary to be ready for the appeal. And just a 1 week before the Court of Appeal was to hear the case, the trial judge released the cost decision. So both lawyers, myself and the lawyer, the appellate lawyer for the husband, decided to add the subject of court costs to the appeal hearing so that we wouldn't have to go to the Court of Appeal twice because we already had a date coming up. And so the Court of Appeal dealt with the original appeal, which is the appeal of the trial decision, as well as the issue of the costs that were granted. In this case, the judge found that my client should be receiving near full indemnity. She asked for $1,050,000, which is what she paid in legal fees, not just to me, but to her previous lawyers, the experts, and my firm. And she asked for $950,000. The judge, she asked for $1,050,000, $1,050,000. She was granted $950,000, which is near indemnity. And then, of course, when we went to the Court of Appeal, heard the case. They dismissed the appeal and they ordered the husband to pay an additional $80,000 in court costs. So this woman ended up recovering just north of $1 million in court costs. Now, what's the takeaway here? The takeaway is, and this goes back to my earlier compliment to Leanne, the takeaway is, if you can resolve your divorce out of court, do it. Do not spend $100,000 or $500,000 or $1 million taking your case to court. Because even if you are like this woman and you achieve complete success, you really are not a winner, because you might think you're a winner. You got everything you wanted. You got your court costs. On paper, you're a winner. But in reality, a person that goes through that, first of all, has to either borrow or spend that money, not knowing if they'll get it back. But that's not even the big issue. The big issue is you don't even know if you're going to win the case. It's always better to secure a known outcome than an unknown outcome after years of litigation and a lengthy trial. Third reason. What is the emotional cost, not the financial cost, the emotional cost of spending years in the court system and doling out hundreds of thousands of dollars in litigation fees to lawyers, not knowing what the outcome will be? So, you know, it's funny. In that case, I've received a lot of accolades from colleagues and other clients. And of course, it was reported to in the news. But, you know, people, I really say this from a place of conviction and concern for the public. If you can hire Leanne Townsend to settle your case out of court, you're a winner. Your ex is a winner. Your children are winners. Your wallet and your retirement savings are all winners.
Well, I mean, and I agree with you, and that's something we can chat about on a, you know, another live about, I think the positive reasons why someone should consider settling something out of court. But the other issue that comes up as well with respect to a costs award is it's one thing to get the award, and then it's a whole other thing to collect the money. And, you know, that's something I've had happen with clients where we've gotten a costs award, but actually getting the money from the other side, particularly I had a few where the other side is self-represented, and it's been a real challenge sometimes to get that money. And so an award like that as well, I mean, you know, these both parties must have some level of you know, financial means to, you know, have been able to spend that kind of money over a period of time. But still, that is always the challenge. You get an award, but collecting it could be a whole other can of worms.
Absolutely. And that applies in civil litigation in general. I mean, yeah. People sue people all the time. But if you get a piece of paper that says somebody owes you money, but you can't enforce it, so what? So let me share with the viewers some tips in this regard. Number one, a interim or temporary costs order is far more valuable than the equivalent dollars in a final order. And I'll tell you why. If you are involved in a litigation and early in the litigation, you get a good costs order. First of all, it does one thing. It sets the tone and it causes the other side to reconsider the strength of their case. And it increases the likelihood that your case will settle. Because at that point, somebody won and somebody lost emotion. And there was a cost consequence to that event. Somebody had to pay a lawyer and got that money back. Somebody had to pay their lawyer and also pay the other person's lawyer. That can have a significant sobering effect that would result in a settlement. Number two, if somebody doesn't pay a costs order in the duration of a litigation, they might lose their ability to continue the court case, because the next judge is going to say, have there been any orders that have been unmet? And then, of course, the person that's sitting on a cost order that the other side hasn't paid is going to make a lot of noise about that and say, this person shouldn't even have the audience of the court while they're at the same time disobeying a court order for costs. And so, for example, I've been hired many times in the past where I'm lawyer number two or three. And the person that hires me says, yeah, there was a cost order made 2 years ago or a year ago. Haven't paid it yet. I said, well, you know, that's going to be a problem, because when I go to court, the judge might say, I'm not going to listen to you because you have a client that hasn't paid court costs. So these are things that, you know, you only know when you do a lot of litigation, like Leanne and I. And so we know that, you know, a cost order after trial that may or may not ever be enforced is far more, is dwarfed by a costs order made during the hearing, during the proceedings, when you can actually use various tools. Another tip, if the costs were ordered as a result of something to do with A, child support, B, spousal support, C, Section 7 expenses like extracurricular activities, if the costs order stems from those issues that were litigated, you can ask the judge to order that the FRO, the Family Responsibility Office, enforce the costs, which is an amazing outcome. Why? Because the FRO will treat the costs order just the same way as they would treat a support order. And in that regard, now things like passports can be canceled, driver's licenses can be suspended, garnishments could be issued against tax refunds, lottery winnings, and against monies held in bank accounts or with employers. You've got all these amazing remedies that you wouldn't have available to you if it was outside of a support order. And then the last point, if it is framed as costs connected to support, then the support payer or the costs ordered cannot be expunged in bankruptcy, which is really important because somebody might get an amazing costs order after a trial, $1 million. And then the person who doesn't want to pay it simply says, you know what, I'm going to go and make an assignment in bankruptcy, and it washes it away. So you got to be smart about these things.
Yeah, those are all great points. It just shows that it's not a simple topic. There's so many layers to the topic of costs. And I think we've done a good job of summarizing the key points for our listeners to know.
Absolutely. So the takeaway, listeners, is don't spend the money, save the money, use the money to resolve your case outside of court, and don't bother even wanting to know what the law of costs is because you've now resolved your case and you've moved on. But if you do have a case and you're in court and you need to see costs, make sure you check off all the boxes that which we discussed today.
Exactly. Be very strategic. Absolutely. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and
bye,
we'll see you here again next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.